Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Red Sox podcast. We thank you for joining us once again and starting your week with us. I'm Lauren Campbell. I cover Boston sports for Nesson alongside my co-host, Boston Herald Red Sox columnist, Jason Mastrodonato. Jason, how was your weekend?
Oh, a lot of Red Sox watching for me this weekend. And they didn't look very good, Lauren. I don't know how much you were paying attention to. Hopefully you had better things to do than I did, because they did not look very good.
No, they didn't. It was really disappointing because I had this weekend off and I wanted to enjoy some good Red Sox baseball and I could not. But we have a jam-packed show for you coming up. We have some MLB draft talk, Matt Barnes' extension, and later on another positive step in Chris Sale's rehab. But before we get into any of that, do not forget that it's MLB draft season and the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast is covering every future star of the MLB. Host RM Layton brings you player interviews and farm system breakdowns every day. Subscribe to Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. What a perfect way to begin the show, because we are talking MLB draft. The Red Sox drafted shortstop Marcelo Meyer at number 4. Jack Leiter went number 2 to the Texas Rangers, and Kumar Rocker fell all the way to number 10 to the New York Mets. This is an awesome pick by the Red Sox. Meyer originally was projected to be number 1. He grew up a Yankees fan and said on ESPN Sunday night that he is now the biggest Red Sox fan of all time. He hit 392 in 34 games as a senior. He's committed to USC right now, but he can forego commitment to turn pro right away. He is a shortstop, so a lot of people online are a little mad about that and a little worried. So, Jason, what are your overall thoughts? Are you shocked that they picked a shortstop? Are you shocked that they didn't go after pitching? What are your initial thoughts?
No, I'm not shocked they drafted a shortstop. I think like 12 teams will end up drafting a shortstop in the first round because all prospects are shortstops until they're no longer shortstops. It's always funny when you know, fans are like, well, why did we draft a shortstop? We don't need one. Well, like, that's all the prospects are either shortstops or catchers. That's just kind of the way they do it. So it's funny to see fans react that way. But it is interesting to look at it in the lens of, like, you had written down to talk about in the show about Xander Bogaerts opting out and possibly opting out. Obviously, that hasn't happened yet. But obviously, he's criminally underpaid. But he wanted to be here. This is, you know, Bogaerts signed this contract knowing that he was criminally underpaid because he wanted to be here. So it's so hard to tell if he's going to opt out. I feel like if they're winning and Alex Cora is still here, he's not going anywhere. But so this kid Meyer is 18 years old. Even if you look at like the best shortstops that were drafted that actually made it to the major leagues and made impacts, like guys like Corey Seager, it took 3 years in the minors before he was even ready to play. Even Xander Bogaerts, like, he made his debut at 20, but he wasn't the shortstop until 21, and then he got moved off short. He really wasn't the full-time shortstop until 22. So it's hard to, even if this kid's amazing, it's hard to see him pushing Xander Bogaerts for his job any sooner than, like, 4 years from now. And at that time, Bogaerts might have already found a new position or a new team. Like, there's so many unknowns. The Red Sox just took the best player available.
And that's what you do in MLB drafts. You don't go after, you know, what you need. It's, you have to draft the best player. And a lot of these prospects are not MLB ready right now. So everyone freaking out, everyone getting so mad that they drafted a shortstop. He's not going to play tomorrow. He's not going to play after the All-Star break. He's not here to push Xander Bogaerts out the door. He could be developed as another infielder. He could be developed as trade bait. You just never know. And I love the pick. Like I said, they picked the best player available, and that's what they had to do.
I really enjoyed kind of reading up on him and watching some videos. It's interesting. He's 18, but he seems very confident, right? As a lot of these kids are. Obviously, you're not going to get drafted in the majors as a teenager if you're not confident. He doesn't really talk a lot. Like, when he answers his questions, it's like two-word answers. You know, he's very right to the point. And they talk about how he's got a lot of flash in his game, but he has no flash in his personality, which is probably the perfect combination of what you want in a kid you're going to take fourth overall. Like, try not to have any concerns about who he is as a person and just enjoy him as a player. And you watch him hit, and he's already 6'3", which is huge for an 18-year-old. And, you know, guys can still grow a little bit at that point. Maybe he'll end up being 6'4". Pretty big for a shortstop. Bogaerts is 6'3", and he's a big shortstop. People said he probably wasn't going to play shortstop his whole career because he's so tall. You know, there are guys like Correa who's 6'4". I think Seager's 6'2". It's becoming a bigger position than it used to be. It used to be like the small guy who has great range, doesn't need to hit, just go play shortstop. Now it's like if you're huge and you have at least decent range and you could rake, you can play shortstop in the major leagues. And Bogaerts is kind of proving that. I mean, he's not an elite shortstop. He's like an average shortstop. A lot of statistics have him as a below average shortstop. But he rakes and he handles the position just fine. And, you know, I could see that with this kid. He's just got a real natural swing. It's fun to watch. I mean, he's playing against high schoolers in these videos you're watching, but it's like, you can see it. You can see why they went with him over a guy like Rocker, who somehow fell to number 10.
That's the biggest shock to me, that Rocker fell all the way to number 10. They had him original. I mean, he was all over the map. He was 1. Could he fall to 4 for the Red Sox? Just, I was shocked when it went to pick 10. I was like, if he doesn't get picked here, when the heck is he going to go? Because I've heard nothing for the last year that it's Kumar Rocker. It's Kumar Rocker. And now it's like, it was not Kumar Rocker at all on Sunday night.
Right. And, you know, it's one of those where if Rocker got picked 5th right behind the Red Sox fans, and rightfully so, and probably us in the media would be saying, whoa, you know, big gamble the Red Sox took. They could have had Kumar Rocker, this kid who throws 99 miles an hour, has a wipeout slider, you know, had one of the highest strikeout rates in college baseball history. You know, he had all the flash, and they could have had him, and they chose this high schooler instead. And then Rocker goes right behind him, but he didn't. He fell all the way to number 10. And so it kind of reminds me of when Jay Groom fell to the Red Sox 4 or 5 years ago, and he was supposed to be the best pitcher in the draft, and he kept falling and falling and falling. And have we seen Jay Groom yet in the major leagues? No.
No.
He's not even close, it doesn't look like. I mean, maybe, you know, it seems like this year he's having finally a decent year, and he had some other things. He had Tommy John. But there were some legitimate concerns about his character at that time, which is why he dropped so far. So when multiple teams are passing on a guy like Kumar Rocker, who was supposed to be like a consensus top 3 pick, when 9 teams pass on him, it's like, okay, you know, they probably know something. And it seems like the Red Sox took the best guy they can get, and this kid looks pretty good. So,
yeah, like I said, I have no issue with the pick at all. I think they went with the best player available. And I understand also why Red Sox fans were so mad, because they do need pitching. Pitching is a concern right now. But some good pitching news for the Red Sox is that they signed Matt Barnes to a 2-year extension with an option for 2024, a club option for 2024. And that was a great move. I was kind of surprised, just because I feel like in-season moves just don't happen too often. And Matt Barnes expressed that he wanted to be here. And what a way to celebrate 10 years with the Red Sox by extending your time here.
Yeah. First of all, smooth transition from...
Thank you. I'm working on those.
Speaking of pitching, Matt Barnes, that was awesome. I loved that. Yes, I agree with you. I think this was a great move for the Red Sox, and also similarly surprised that it happened in the middle of the season. You're right, these do not happen often. I can't remember the last time the Red Sox extended somebody in the middle of the season. I mean, they extended Bogaerts like 3 games in, but that was a little different. Like, the season had just started and talks just kind of ran long from spring training. You know, there's no question Barnes dominating this year is why the Red Sox did this. The question is, why did Matt Barnes do this?
Like, I know, he probably had a huge market for him, like waiting for him.
Oh my God. I mean, he ranks number 1 in Fangraphs and AL reliever WAR. You know, he all the numbers this year, so I looked it up, the last 5 seasons of his career, he's got a strikeout rate of 13.4 per 9, and he's thrown 255 innings. So I just looked it up. Over the last 6 years, any pitchers, any relievers who have at least 200 innings, a strikeout rate of 13, and to see what came up. There's 7 of them, and 5 of them have gone on to sign mega deals, like Liam Hendricks, $54 million over 3 years. Craig Kimbrell was getting paid $17 million a year. Aroldis Chapman, the highest contract ever signed by a relief pitcher. Andrew Miller making a ton of money. Even Dellin Betances, who got hurt still got a $10.5 million deal with the Mets. And Matt Barnes is signing to make $7 million a year. So, I mean, I don't know why Matt Barnes did this, but what a great move for the Red Sox.
It is. And, you know, if he continues this, they look like an incredible team. And they pick up that club option. I love that it's a club option, not a player option. And it's just, it looks so good for the Red Sox right now. And even if Matt Barnes kind of falls back down to earth and maybe he's not as dominant in the second half or in the next year or two, it's still not a terrible contract. So it's really a win-win for the Red Sox.
No, that's a great point. Even if he does, right? Like, obviously the Red Sox don't think he's going to, you can't possibly bet on him to be this good
right
in the next 3 years of this deal. I mean, two, maybe 3 years if they pick up the option, which they probably will. It's an $8 million option. It can escalate to $10 million based on how he does the season before it's due. So even $10 million, I mean, if he's Matt Barnes of 3 years ago, you still might pick him up. You still might pick that option up, right? I mean, if he's a 3.5-4 ERA, still a great strikeout pitcher, you still probably pick the option up, depending on what the market looks like. But that's the weird thing to me is even last year, in a slow free agent market, we had three relievers who got eight-figure salaries. And again, Matt Barnes comes in, has the season of his career dominating, and he's like, I'll take $7 million a year. And it ends up being a little bit more than that. It's going to be a two-year, $18.75 million contract. So I guess it's more like a little over $9 million a season when you include the signing bonus. But again, I just can't believe he did it. I think he would have made so much money if he went to free agency, unless he got hurt. But do you think, I'm curious your opinion on this, do you think this is kind of a sign that players want to stay in Boston now?
I absolutely do. I think Alex Cora is a big part of that. I think winning and being successful is a big part of that. And they, I mean, still, $9 million is a lot of money, but it's not, you know, Roldis Chapman money. So obviously, looking on the outside in, someone who does not make $9 million a year, I'd be like, yeah, I'll take that, sure. I'll take $1 million. But when you know your worth and you know your market, I mean, I think that Matt Barnes really does like to stay here, want to stay here, and I think he enjoys pitching here. And I think, too, that this is the best year of his career. Why wouldn't he want to keep trying to build off that in the place where he's having this much success?
Yeah, and you made a good point about Cora, too. Guys, too, love to play for Cora. But it's funny because we spent so long talking about Mookie Betts and how Mookie Betts doesn't want to be here. He wants to hit free agency. He gets traded and he signs long-term extension, like, right away. And we're talking about David Price. He didn't really want to be here. He was very unhappy here. Gets traded, looks so much happier in L.A. I mean, he hasn't pitched a whole lot in L.A. He opted out last season, and I think he got hurt this season. I haven't even looked at his numbers recently, but it seemed like he was thrilled to get out of Boston. I remember Carl Crawford really didn't like being here.
Oh, my God.
Adrian Gonzalez seemed pretty happy to get out of here. So, there are some players, and obviously it must be said, you know, Boston has a reputation. African-American players often don't enjoy playing in Boston, so we have to say that part as well because it's just facts. They say it over and over again. But I feel like we've talked about this so much that players don't want to be here, and now you have guys like Barnes and Bogarts and Chris Sale who are signing here for team-friendly deals. So I guess it just depends on the guy.
Coming up, we're going to still talk about pitchers. We have a little bit of Chris Sale talk, and we're going to recap the dreadful weekend series, unfortunately. But first, Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all of the action right at Bet Online. Get all the latest news, odds, and all of your sporting needs, including MLB and NBA, NHL, and all your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Do not sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for that welcome bonus. Welcome back. We wish we could have more positive news going into the All-Star break about the Red Sox last series, but unfortunately we do not. They dropped 2 out of 3 to the Phillies. The Phillies had a COVID outbreak and the Red Sox still did not look their best over the weekend. They won Friday night with Garrett Richards on the mound. He went 5 innings, struck out 4. Only allowed 1 walk, which was reassuring to see. Martin Perez did not do so well Saturday. He only lasted 3 2/3 innings with 4 strikeouts as well, but gave up 6 hits, 3 earned runs. And they lost about, what was it, 11-5? Was that 11-5 that day? 11-2. And then Saturday, Sunday,
11-5. Sorry, go ahead.
11-2 was 11-2 was Friday.
11-5 was Friday. 11-2 was Saturday.
Well, we got the 11 part right. Okay. That's what matters. So it was kind of opposite Friday and Saturday. And then Sunday, they lost a one-run game with Nick Pivetta on the mound, who has been pretty solid pretty much all year. Now he's been in a bit of a slump. Four innings, four hits, four earned runs, two walks, and four strikeouts. So it was just not a – it was a very weird series for them. Josh Taylor finally came back down to earth, and the offense came along Friday, kind of was sleeping Saturday, and was – mediocre Sunday. It was just a very, very weird series to close out the official first half of the season.
Yeah, you know, it's I was talking to my friend Scott Lauber, who used to work at the Herald, who now covers the Phillies for the Philly Inquirer on Friday. I saw him at the ballpark Saturday morning, actually. The Red Sox had just lost, and I said, what's going on with the Phillies? They're not very good this year, huh? Like, the Red Sox are just going to steamroll in this series. He goes, nope, watch, the Phillies are going to win the next two. This is just what they do. They're like hot and cold. Like, they play terribly and then they go out and play well. And he nailed it. So, you know, it's not just the Red Sox. The Phillies seem to have this reputation as well of playing bad and then coming back and playing great. But there is a concern, I think, about how few innings they're getting out of their starting pitching lately. And it worked because they had some days off that they could kind of work around. They had the All-Star break coming up. But if they keep getting 3 2/3 out of Martin Perez and 4 out of Nick Pivetta, I mean, it's like watching a tire turn in mud when Garrett Richards gets 5 innings. It's like, oh my God, it takes so long to get there, but it happens. He gives you the 5 innings. So I'm more concerned about, I don't think this is sustainable. And all year, the Red Sox have been getting pretty good starting pitching. If you look at from month to month, it's gotten worse and worse and worse. They end the break actually 22nd in starting pitching ERA. Obviously not good. But the innings is a concern to me, because the reason the bullpen's been so good and the hallmark of most good bullpens is a starting rotation that throws innings, because it keeps your guys rested. It keeps them in roles that they need to be in. And this is my biggest concern, right? Like, am I alone on this?
No, you're not. I think that we've seen bullpens, particularly the Red Sox bullpen, get taxed before, that they get overused because the starting pitchers just cannot go as deep into games as they have been. I mean, 5 innings, okay, but 6 would be better. We can't have Nick Pivetta and Martin Perez being able to get out of the 4th and 5th innings going forward. Like, they need to be able to go at least 6. And yeah, some of these starts are going to happen. Like, not every pitcher, unless you're Jacob DeGrom, you're not going to go 6-7 innings every single time. And that's fine, but this shouldn't be a common occurrence to be going 3 2/3, 4 or 5 innings. It's getting ugly. And people hate when I say this, and like, my fiance cringes every time I say this, but this is where the Red Sox miss somebody like Rick Porcello, because he ate innings. He ate so many innings, and it didn't matter if he was giving up 2 or 3 runs. He never got run support anyway, but he was giving you the innings that gave that bullpen the rest, and they don't really have somebody like that right now. They have Evaldi, but you can't just depend on that one person to get you through.
That's a great point about Rick Porcello, and
it's a shame he's not pitching right now.
I was going to say, and he's available. So so if the Red Sox want a Rick Porcello type, they can just go get Rick Porcello. I don't know why. That's, you know, somebody should do a story on that. What happened to him? Why is he not pitching?
And I know he had a down year, but I just throw all of 2020 away last year, pretty much. It was just a wash for a lot of players, and he bet on himself, and okay, it didn't really work, but he still gives you the innings that teams need.
I mean, he already made his money, right? Ben Sherrington paid him a contract that was highly questionable at the time, and still looking back is pretty questionable. So he made his money, but man, he's only 32. And he had a good strikeout rate with the Mets last year. Gave up a whole lot of hits and a lot of runs, which is kind of Porcello's hallmark, other than the season he won 22 games. But, no, you're right. They're really missing a guy like that, like Rick Porcello. And who's going to come back? You know, they're going to start the second half with Tanner Houck in the rotation, I think. If not in the rotation, then in the bullpen. I mean, Tanner Houck is clearly going to come play a role for this team. They can't wait any longer. I mean, it's to me, it's mystifying that he hasn't been in the majors all year. I mean, obviously got hurt briefly. But they need to get him up immediately and figure this out. And you and I have talked about this before, but I'd put Houck right in the rotation and send Richards to the bullpen. Because if you start Houck in the bullpen, now, well, what if you need him as a starter later? Well, now he's not stretched out. Now we got to give him back stretched out again. It's like this back and forth, whereas Richards, like, you've already seen 20 starts of him. We're good. You know, he's not going to be a starter in your playoff rotation. Just let's see what he can do in the bullpen.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think either Richards or Perez needs to go into the bullpen, and Tanner Houck needs to take that spot in the rotation. I think that putting him in the bullpen will be detrimental. I think that would destroy his confidence, and he's worked so hard to get his confidence back up, especially after an injury. He looks great. Just ride with him until you think that he maybe either needs to go back down or that hopefully he doesn't get hurt again. But they're only one injury away from being forced to call him up, where it's like you can call him up right now, slot him into the rotation, and slot one of your other guys into the bullpen. DFA Matt Andrees. I just fixed the Red Sox pitching problems just like that in a matter of minutes.
Well, they basically DFA'd him when they put him on the injured list the other day. You know, one of those, like, he has a hamstring injury? Okay, sure, he has a hamstring injury. We'll go with that. He has a hamstring injury, so Matt Andrees is on the injured list now. But it's not just Andrees' spot. I mean, they're still using Jaxel Rios, who's, you know, hasn't really looked like a quality big league pitcher. Garrett Richards obviously has not looked like a quality big league pitcher over the last couple of months. So there are holes to fill, and so, you know, you're right to talk about the rotation. I think it's a concern right now.
But one of those holes that could be being filled soon is Chris Sale. He threw his final bullpen session Saturday. It was 2 innings. And the day after is the most important, because if he feels any fatigue, any soreness, they're going to shut him down or they're going to have him do more bullpen sessions. But Alex Cora on Sunday said that he felt great. They were texting after, and Chris Sale said he felt great. So that's fantastic news. So now he'll be pitching in 2 innings in a Florida Complex League game. I could not tell you what that means, like what the next step is. If this is part of like a rehab assignment, if this is like a Worcester or a Portland situation, but he is doing that on Thursday. The game is at noon, and the Red Sox play the Yankees on Thursday. So hopefully we'll have some sort of update. Obviously, Friday will be the tell-all day. But this is great news. He's made great progress despite having COVID, despite having some neck issues. I just feel like he's stayed on his timeline, and that's Chris Sale for you. But this is news that is coming at the right time.
Yeah. You know, the problem for me is, after the game today, is after or before, I can't remember, Alex Cora was talking, oh, it was after, he was talking about the rotation. And he said, you know, we got some guys we think are going to help us in the second half. Wink, wink, Chris Sale, wink, wink. And we're trying to be patient. We've been patient all year, so we're going to keep being patient. And just talked about how patient they're being with Chris Sale. And it's like, well, if you keep talking about how patient you're being, it doesn't sound very patient. I think that's the concern, is that the starting rotation has fallen apart. And they're really going to want to get this guy back. And Sale pays attention. He watches these games. He knows what's going on. And so, you know, I think you're constantly worried that he's going to push himself too hard. But the Florida Complex League, which I had to look it up also because I didn't realize what that was. It used to be the Gulf Coast League, basically when they consolidated all the minor league teams, they lost some leagues. So now it was the Gulf Coast League and the Arizona Complex League, and I don't know. Now it's the Florida Complex League, but it's just rookie-level ball. So they're just starting Sale at the lowest level, probably so that he doesn't exert himself too hard, although I'm sure he will. But if you kind of map it out, like 2 innings Thursday, maybe 3 innings 5 days after that, four. If he goes up 1 inning at a time, and maybe he only needs 4, and they bring him back in 3 weeks.
And that would be great. That would put us right at the end of August. I think that would put him right on your timeline where you said about 4 weeks he'll be here. So I think it's just what you said. They don't want him to exert himself, but I'm sure just being in game action, he's going to have just so much adrenaline, so much energy, and just so much excitement, because he hasn't pitched in a big league game since 2019, and just getting that little taste of action will be good for him. But I mean, I know the Red Sox have been patient. I'm getting impatient now just because of the struggles that the rotation are going through, and I know Chris Sale will be able to help. I don't expect Chris Sale to come in and fix this rotation. That's not what he's going to do. I don't want to expect the world of him when he he's recovering from Tommy John. Like, that is, it's not a finger, it's not a hamstring. They went into his elbow and just, like, fixed his elbow. And he was in this massive bionic arm brace for months. And he just started throwing, you know, full force recently in the last few months. So I don't expect 100%, but I know Chris Sale expects 100% from Chris Sale.
And that's the thing, right? Like, we can say, hey, you don't have to be everything, but it doesn't matter what we say. It matters how the rotation's performing. And if the rotation's performing like this, Chris Sale's going to come in, and not only is he going to say, I have to be Chris Sale again, but everybody's going to look at him and be like, save us. Save us, please. And they've kind of already said that in so many words here and there throughout the year. Like, they'd be playing well. I think it was Kike Hernandez said, you know, we're just trying to play well until Chris Sale comes back. And I think that was the entire goal of the season, was play well enough to get to July where Chaim Bloom doesn't sell off players and actually has to look at adding. And hopefully you get Chris Sale back and he gives you a boost, because I don't think even the Red Sox thought they were the favorites starting the season. I mean, I think they thought they were better than we thought they were. You know, they use terms like sneaky good to describe themselves. But I think they're kind of looking at Chris Sale and thinking, save us, you know, especially the way this rotation's been going. And that's dangerous, but that's just what's going to happen.
And especially, too, somebody like Chris Sale, that guy's an animal. That you can't tell him, like, oh, don't shoulder any blame. Like, this is not on you. But I just feel like Chris Sale's mind is going to work. He's going to go in there and be like, I need to save this rotation. I need to go 6-7 innings. I'll throw 140 pitches if I have to. I'll throw my arm off if I have to. And it's just like, no, we don't need that. Coming up, we have our unpopular opinions, as always, and our positive takeaways. There are some, we promise, despite this ugly weekend, but we do have some of those. But I need to tell you about Built Bar. Built Bar has this new limited time flavor. It's called Built Grasshopper Cookie. It tastes just like those classic Thin Mint cookies. Who doesn't love those? It's Girl Scout cookie season, and that's what always sells out, right? It's always the Thin Mints. So they're only 150 calories, 17 grams of protein, only 5 grams of sugar. But other than that flavor, they have so many other delicious flavors. There's something for everybody. My favorite is the double chocolate or the cookies and cream. I cannot decide. They're just so good. Every morning before my workout, or after my workout, I should say, it's the perfect little snack. They don't taste like cardboard. I'm very picky with my protein bars. I cannot have a lot of them that are out there. And these ones are just perfect. You have to try them. And if you haven't tried all of the flavors that they offer, you can get a mixed box where you'll get 2 of each of their 9 flavors. So you can't go wrong there. And not only are Built Bar's flavors the best tasting, but they're also healthy too. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. All the amazing flavors, they're all super tasty, and they're all super healthy. Order today and get the grasshopper cookie or raspberry, double chocolate, whatever you want. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Welcome back. It is time for one of my favorite segments, our unpopular opinions. And Jason, I want you to go first because I really like what you have written down here, because I have a feeling this might ruffle some feathers.
So, okay, it was Friday when Kike Hernandez had a Zoom session with reporters before the game. Unusual for a player to have a Zoom session before home games now, because they stopped doing that because media gets access on the field. But it was rainy, so they gave us a player. It was Kike Hernandez. And unprompted, he just went into kind of a complaining rant about how upset he was that the Red Sox were playing the Yankees on Thursday after the All-Star break. And it's the only game in town on Thursday. There's no other games in the Major League Baseball slate. Every other team begins playing Friday. So Kike thinks it's unfair that the Red Sox and Yankees have to play on Thursday when all the other teams get to wait until Friday. He wants a longer All-Star break. And he said Major League Baseball is just doing this to make money, and it's he's just not happy about it. And I was floored that he actually said this publicly, because, yeah, no players want a short All-Star break. Actually, what they should do at the end of the season is they should have talks when they're negotiating the CBA, the new CBA, about having a longer All-Star break, because the baseball season is not like most sports. It's a 9-month season if you play in the postseason, between spring training and postseason. They never get any time off. From when spring training starts until the postseason ends, there is no breaks except 3 days in July. So I absolutely think they should look into having a longer break. Maybe give them the whole week off. The problem is, first of all, there's precedent for this, which is what Alex Cora said, because Cora was asked about it and was not even remotely interested in joining Kike in the complaint train on this one. Cora made the point that they've been doing this for 4 years, Major League Baseball. They pick one game, a marquee game. They put it on Thursday after the All-Star break, and that's the game they go with. And obviously, when you sign up to be on the Red Sox, you're signing up for some national audiences. You're signing up for weird game times and for game times at night with an early getaway the next day because you're playing on ESPN on a lot of Sunday nights. That's what you sign up for when you sign up for to play for the Red Sox or the Yankees. He signed here to make $7 million a year, which is a lot of money for a guy who typically has only played against left-handers. So, to me, I would say I understand where he's coming from, but I do not think it was smart for him to complain about this. I don't think he won any new fans by doing it, and I don't think he's going to get a whole lot of sympathy.
No, either. Certainly not. And I, like you said, I understand his gripe. I understand that it's not a lot of time to come back, and I understand, too, that he was frustrated for his teammates who have to catch a flight to Denver and then come back Wednesday and just try to, you know, catch up on the time difference, catch up on your rest that you didn't really get because you were at the All-Star game. I totally get that. But like you said, this is what you sign up for. You're with the Boston Red Sox. This stuff is unfortunately going to happen. And it just kind of came out of nowhere. I feel like this was something he was bottled up and he saw his opportunity right to go after it. And he did. It was just very bizarre because I think it was just, I don't know if I've heard anybody just complain so much about it before.
Yeah, and he didn't complain. You know, it wasn't like he was off there for 20 minutes complaining about it. It was, you know, I think it was one or two questions, maybe a minute or two. But it caught me by surprise that, you know, he was basically essentially complaining that he's on a big market team and has to play in marquee games with a national audience. And you don't hear players complain about
that. Right, you don't hear Xander Bogaerts or J.D. Martinez going in on MLB for the short break, and they're the ones on a plane right now to Denver. So. Mine, as much as we've talked about the pitching tonight, I'm still going to stick with that, but Martin Perez does not belong in this rotation. I don't know if he even really belongs on this team, but which wow. is kind of harsh, I know, but when the Red Sox re-signed him, I was not angry, but I was just like, why? What is the point? I love Martin Perez. I think he's really fun on Twitter. I think he's interactive with fans, which is great. He's always positive, which is great. There's a lot to like about him. But I didn't know if he did enough in 2020 to warrant another shot in 2021. And I know I just said 2020 was a wash for a lot of pitchers, and sure. But, I mean, he's just not – I don't know. I want him in the bullpen when Tanner Houck inevitably gets called up. I think it should be him over Richards in the bullpen. And I don't think Perez has been as bad as his numbers are showing. But I just don't think he has a spot on this rotation.
So who are you replacing him with? Okay, so Richard stays
for me. But I'm also he's not on any like long leash by any means. I mean, I'll gladly put Perez back in this rotation if Richards blows it up again, which if he keeps going on this trend, it's going to happen. I think there's a lot of good options for the bullpen, which is a good problem to have.
So I like what you're saying, you know, that it was questionable to bring him back, and I think he's going to cost him, what, $4.5 million this year? $4.5 million with the $500,000 option. And they actually restructured his contract. They declined his option from the previous year just to save like $1 million. And he still came back. You need these guys. You need fifth starters who give you innings. He doesn't cost a whole lot. But I was surprised they didn't use this money somewhere else. I mean, he's got the highest ERA. Entering this season, he had the highest ERA of any pitcher with at least 50 starts over the last 3 years. His ERA was 5.3, and his WHIP is also dead last among that group of 1.54. He statistically was the worst starting pitcher in baseball for 3 straight years, and so the Red Sox brought him back anyway. So I totally understand your frustration with that. They probably could have used that money somewhere else. I don't know if I'd put him in the bullpen over Garrett Richards. I think Richards' profile of a guy who throws hard and has a wipeout breaking ball, and he's done it before where Perez hasn't. Okay, that's an interesting take.
We'll see about like Cora, who he goes with when Tanner Houck inevitably gets called up after the All-Star break.
Right, exactly. I don't, yeah. I think they like Martin Perez more than they like Garrett Richards, which probably has a lot to say too.
Before we get to our positive news and notes for the weekend, I want to ask, who is winning the Home Run Derby this year?
Obviously Ohtani. I mean, you know how I feel about Ohtani. He's the favorite to win it, and I'd be surprised if he doesn't. He just seems like he's got a flair for the spotlight, for the big stage. I'm all in on Ohtani.
First, I was like, maybe it could be Joey Gallo, but I don't know. I mean, I just think Ohtani is just doing so many incredible things this year that he's destined to win the Home Run Derby. So I certainly think that I think he's going to hit at least 90 homers. I don't know if he's going to break Vlad Jr.'s record from 2 years ago now, but I think he's going to get up there because he's going to get meatballs served to him, and he's just going to take every single one out of Coors Field.
Yeah, it's just going to be scary to see what he does in the second half. We've seen this before. Players come out of the Home Run Derby and they stink. So I just hope that doesn't happen with him.
He's so much fun. He's so good for the sport of baseball. And especially after Ronald Acuna Jr. went down with an ACL injury, we need Ohtani to be healthy at all costs. So let's get into some positive happiness from the weekend. And so, Jason, what can you take away from this weekend?
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the taunting that Adam Ottavino did to Shohei Ohtani. And I got a chance to talk to Ottavino about that on Saturday morning. And it was interesting because he said he didn't say sorry. He said he didn't even bother reaching out to Ohtani to apologize. And he specifically said, because I'm not sorry. But he said he meant no disrespect, even though he acknowledged it was certainly disrespectful. He said he was just so angry in that moment that Ohtani was even at the plate. He was so mad at himself. He was so mad at the umpire, he thought missed some calls. And he said he was mad at his team for the shift they were in. And he said he's just been really angry all year because the Yankees let him go. And that's it's changed his whole perspective when he was basically salary dumped from the Yankees. And we saw what happened after that, right? Ohtani blasted them the next two nights and won that series. So we basically had the same thing happen in New York this weekend, where Aaron Judge is taunting the Astros, where he pulls his shirt off to kind of simulate what happened where Altuve refused to take his shirt off in that the playoff game, was it? And then people accused him of having a buzzer, and that's why he didn't take his shirt off. So Judge hits a home run. He's rounding the bases. He kind of fakes like he's keeping his shirt on to troll them a little bit. And what happens the next night on Sunday? Jose Altuve with a 3-run walk-off homer against the Yankees to win the game in a 6-run ninth inning. It was the best ninth inning comeback of the season. And they ripped Altuve's shirt off when he rounded home plate. So this is, I guess, positive for the Red Sox because the Yankees are getting trolled and lost. And also a reminder that you get what you ask for.
It's true. I mean, listen, as bad as the Red Sox weekend was, watching the Yankees melt down after leading 7-2 is always sweet. And I'm sure Red Sox fans will agree. Even though the Astros won, you're getting the trade-off of the Yankees just melting down. And like you said, you know, Aaron Judge with the taunting, which, listen, Red Sox fans probably love that too. And it's kind of adds to the rivalry, but it's also kind of like, let's move on now. But it's just karma coming back full circle.
Karma.
Pretty much immediately.
Karma will get you.
Karma is very real. Very real. My positive thing is I have so much faith in the Red Sox for the second half of the season. I think there is so much to look forward to. Chris Sale's obviously coming back. Tanner Houck obviously will be here. Jaron Duran will probably be here. Maybe they'll have to shift some things around because it sounds like Marwin Gonzalez is going to go on the injured list, unfortunately. So maybe he'll be here a little sooner than expected. Maybe they'll stop, you know, bringing Michael Chavis up and down. But I think there's a lot more to be positive about going into the second half of the season, despite a crappy weekend, despite the way the first half ended, and despite the starting pitching and the bullpen being taxed. I still think there's a lot, and I think that fans are going to be in for a very pleasant surprise. I don't think the Red Sox are going to be AL East champions,
wow,
but I think that they're going to give the Rays a run for their money, and I think that's we're going to have a lot of good baseball.
Wow, they're not going to be AL East champions, but you think they're going to be really good in the second half. Okay, so they're going to blow the lead.
Yeah, probably to the Rays. You know, I do think that it's going to be close. It's going to be until the end of September. We're not going to have an AL East champion or AL East winner. Yeah, champion. Yeah. I said it right. I'm in my own head now. But I think that it's going to come down to the very end of this season between those two teams. I think the Yankees are just absolutely dumpster fire and not going to be anywhere near this AL East contention. But that will do it for today's show. Thank you once again for spending your Monday talking baseball with us. You can find me on Twitter at lalalalauren, three laws, then Lauren with four R's. And also please be sure to follow Locked On Red Sox on Twitter at LO_Red Sox. And Jason, tell us where everyone can connect with you.
Yeah, please read my stuff in the Boston Herald or follow me on Twitter at jmastrodonato.
And of course, please rate, review, and subscribe to Locked On Red Sox so you can get the latest episodes the second they drop. And be sure to tune back in tomorrow so we can go over how right or how wrong we were about the Home Run Derby. So hopefully we'll be talking about Ohtani winning it all. And get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.